This is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Let's talk about artificial intelligence, AI. AI gives computers the latitude to think like people and potentially a lot better or at least faster than people. But since AI systems are created by people, they can contain some biases from their creators. An Oregon State University doctoral student and researchers at Adobe created a technique for training AI designed to make AI systems less socially biased. We have the doctoral student with us. That is Eric Sliman. Eric is a PhD student at Oregon State University, EECS graduate ambassador in the College of Engineering, and the co-president of the Oregon State University AI Graduate Student Association. Eric Sliman, welcome.
Hey, it's so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. Let me start very general for the folks who are catching up to AI. You work with AI. What do you make of the division between the people who think AI will be a big help and the people who think it could end the human race?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's going to end the human race, but I think it's fair to approach it from both perspectives, right? Like, this is a technology that has capability to bring a lot of good to people, to kind of alleviate some of these repetitive, boring things we don't want to do, or to help scientists model things better. But it also has potential to give a lot of harm, to replicate kind of the worst parts of our own history at the same time.
How long have you been working with AI? And I assume it's long enough to feel fairly comfortable around AI and the concepts of it.
Yeah, that's a great question. I probably started, back in 2018, I think. I started doing research on AI during my undergrad. I did that research during my master's degree. I spent some time in national labs working on it, and now I'm here doing my PhD. So I don't remember, quick maths, but 2024 minus 2018 gives us
years.
A number of years.
Uh-huh. As you approach the work, I mean, how much is it informed by you know, scary thoughts about AI or cautions about it anyway?
You know, so my specific niche of AI is on robustness and fairness. So I care a lot about where things go wrong in specific odd cases. So in that way, all of my work is kind of informed by this, you know, what's the scary thing that can happen? And it hasn't always been that way. I kind of had like an aha moment of this is what we should care about a few years ago. But at this point, that is the problems I work on. I almost never look at the fun side of it. I'm sort of a professional wet blanket, for lack of better words.
All right. So you're one of the dampening crew to say, whoa, 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 this is not working right. Okay. Which makes you really unpopular, I'm sure, with some of your colleagues.
Yeah. You know, I'm a joy to have at parties. We'll put it that way.
You mentioned specific odd cases. So walk us into some of the things you've noticed, some of the things like social biases that show up in AI. Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, so, you know, this is not the most common example, but it's one that's really close to home for me. So as some people probably notice, you introduced me as a they, them, but obviously I have a very masculine sounding voice. So I'm male assigned at birth, AMAB, and I've used technology like this to explore gender, for example, to say, what if I were to take a photo of myself and use that to apply makeup to see what I would look like when I was first like coming to terms with my identity. And when I noticed what I did this is that it would apply makeup to my face, this sort of like image translation process, but it would change the bone structure of my face as well to actually be more traditionally feminine. So I would have a slighter jawline. If I had any notion of like a little bit of facial stubble, that would go away. And that's because these models, these AI, are trained on the internet. So it kind of has this association of, oh, if you're someone that's wearing makeup, then you're probably someone who's like traditionally feminine and looks like these ways we've prescribed a woman to look. And that's like one way of like, I saw this like, oh, like that feels bad. I can't use this technology in the way that feels good for me. But it's sort of true across the board. And so we see that this pops up in terms of like racial discrimination, gender discrimination, all these sorts of nasty things that we've seen in our world in the past and in our world now continue to exist on in these AI that people typically try to think of as being impartial or not making these sorts of discriminative judgments.
Well, that statement alone about, you know, the AI trained on the internet has the potential to be somewhat scary in itself, because sure, there's lots of wonderful things out there. The knowledge of the world basically is on the internet, but there's also a lot of garbage out there and incomplete thinking and stuff. So that phrase alone, internet trained AI, starts with some problems, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it does. You know, I spend a lot of time doing interviews with people who I don't necessarily agree with in terms of political alignment, because I really believe the work that I do is for everybody. And so I want to make sure everybody's voices are involved. And even when I'm talking with people who, you know, might disagree with me in every way, we still have common consensus of the internet doesn't represent our values. And it's true, right? Like, not only is a lot of the internet garbage, most of the internet is garbage. And I've yet to meet anyone who says, like, yeah, I agree with everything I read on Facebook or everything I read on Reddit or whatever, right? So it's not in alignment with human values to teach AI based on the values of the internet.
Eric Sliman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a PhD student at Oregon State University, and working on a system to train AI better to eliminate some of the human biases that can get in. Let's talk about how they get in. Do you give the benefit of the doubt that people do not intentionally put their biases into AI?
So we almost have to take a step back from that, because people aren't intentionally putting anything in AI. If you think about the vastness of the internet, we, on the small scale, if we're trying to teach an AI, for example, that can see and speak about the world, so maybe that you can show a picture and ask to write a caption for you about that picture, we're talking about a minimum of 400 million image caption pairs. That's more than one human can even really conceive, saying, I'm going to influence in this way or influence it in that way, or even audit what all is going into the AI. So it's less like people are intentionally or unintentionally biasing it, so much as at a societal level of what we capture on the internet, there's these inherent trends, and we don't have a good way of understanding how they work into that system until it's already trained and deployed and having effects on people.
So given all that, and yeah, what I'm just trying to visualize 400 million, it's just about impossible for my human brain, but this is what we're talking about with AI. It's just able to take in so much more and I guess essentially have discrete places to store it all. How then do you propose going about taking something trained on the internet and making it less likely that it is influenced too heavily by the internet and less likely that a bias will show up?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that people go about this, and I'm certainly not the only one that works on it. In this particular context, this work of FairToDupe, we're studying a specific thing that people have to do in real life to train this AI and deploy it in the world. So, like you said, 400 million images is like unfathomable, right? That's a ridiculous number. The internet's even bigger than that, and we have even more data than that than we can show to AI, but it's not computationally or economically feasible to do so. So what people do in practice is they take their true internet data set, which is maybe 2 billion images, and they say, I'm going to filter that down. And what we find is that when you filter that down, whatever social biases that might exist as captured on the internet, say something like men being more likely to be doctors or women being nurses, that sort of gender occupation bias gets reinforced through common techniques that people are using to reduce the number of images. And I can go in depth on that, but it honestly gets really technical really quickly. And the short version is that in our work, we look at that process where people are sort of selecting what images they want to use to train their AI, and making sure that that selection is representative so that we don't only choose, for example, photos of doctors that are men to show the AI, but choose photos of doctors that are men, that are women, that have ambiguous and various genders. We're trying to make sure that we don't sort of exclude these low represented people on the internet in this engineering process that happens in real life.
So does that come with explicit instructions to AI that, you know, X number of people in our society are doctors, therefore you should be looking for that number of images?
Yeah, so it's sort of customizable by what we deem to be fair, because fair is contextual, right? Like, what is fair in one scenario is not fair in every scenario. And based on what we think is important, right? So maybe I care about having diverse representations of gender, but I don't care about having diverse representations of breeds of cat that are shown to our model, for example. So what we allow people to do is specify what constraint they want. For example, we say we want equal representation or as close to equal as we can get. And just in natural language, like the way we're speaking right now, what kinds of things or attributes we deem to be important. So for example, I could say that varied races, genders, and ages are important in alignment with U.S. law around occupations and hiring. And our system would help then pick images that are diverse along those spectrums instead of weeding out any particular one.
Eric Sliman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a doctoral student at Oregon State University working with Adobe on a training technique for artificial intelligence that that makes them AI systems less socially biased. So you dropped the term fair dedupe already, which is the name of your system. So it's about deduplication. What is duplicated that you're trying to duplicate less?
Yeah, so I said earlier that whenever people are looking at their full set of data from the internet, you might end up with something like 2 billion images that we're filtering down. And there's kind of multiple levels of filters that people apply. The most base level one is called deduplicating your data, and it's because there's lots of copies of the exact same thing that exist on the internet. You know, you might imagine a presidential portrait that's just been shared on many, many different websites. We might end up with thousands of copies of that same exact image. And so one thing people try to do is remove those copies. And researchers figured out about a year and a half ago that we can do that a little more aggressively. So instead of just removing these sorts of exactly duplicated images, we could remove ones that are semantically redundant as well. So thinking of these pictures, these presidential portraits, you could have a whole bunch of them that are capturing the same president. There may be different views of the same image. They're not the exact same thing, but they're close enough that you're not getting really any more information out of it. We can remove those as well, and this enables us to train our AI more cheaply and more quickly and generally without loss of accuracy. And so whenever we're talking about fair dedupe, we're studying what happens when people do this really aggressively, because in practice, what they do is tune that up so high such that it's not so much about these slight changes that make images different, but instead whole concepts. So we might think of photos of doctors. We're trying to find a way to remove half of those photos of doctors of our internet data set to train faster. And at that point, you start moving images that are actually not really the same at all. They're just capturing maybe the same occupation. And it's at that level, that granularity, that we start to see fairness outcomes change.
How do you get to that level of granularity, though, given the limitations of humans to check, you know, 400 million or 2 billion images?
Yeah, so us AI researchers, we love to use AI to do our research as well. So it's actually by taking other models, other AI that have been trained to look at something like the similarity between two images and applying those to make those decisions automatically for us. So you can just say some threshold of my AI model says image A and images B, C, D, E, whatever, are within some similarity of each other. And if that's the case, we can throw away all those other images and just keep the original one.
We got about 2 minutes left, and we could potentially go deep into the weeds, but let me come back to the general. And for the people wondering, what can AI do for me? Explain how your work with Fair Dedupe can help them.
So we're studying something known as a foundation model. This is what informs AI of how to perceive the world. So in our case, this is a vision language model. It's AI that teaches, it's a training technique that teaches AI how to see visually what's in the world and how to speak about those things. You can imagine if I were to show you a photo, it's how you learn to describe that photo to a friend. And these are used as upstream ways of understanding visual and linguistic inputs to other AI models that you engage with later. So one really hot thing right now is all of these sorts of conversational AIs where you can open a web page and you can upload an image, you can chat about it, you can ask it questions. And these sorts of conversational agents are enabled to do that vision and language understanding based on these models, these foundation models that we study. And that's like a really high-tech current way that it's happening right now, but it's actually been used in our technology for a long time. So whenever you go on your search engine of choice and search, you know, maybe for a PowerPoint, I think every person that's created a PowerPoint needed an image for it, and search for that photo that you want to insert, these are the AI that's trying to help you decide what images to put in, what images are shown to you on that search engine. Or when you're on a phone and maybe it reads off an image that was sent to you with assistive technology, this is the kind of AI that helps determine what is read off to you when that assistive technology is engaged.
Now, you presented Fair Dedupe at a conference in Seattle recently. How was the reception?
It was really great. Honestly, I can say that this kind of work doesn't always get an incredibly positive reception, right? There's some, you know, it's not a political issue, but it's certainly tangential to it. And there's strong feelings about the intersection of that and science. But people really saw value in this, like academic value and real-world value from people that are our industry and are having to work with these models and understand the practical implications of the engineering we have to do to get them into deployment. So it was really exciting. This was actually probably the most positive reception I've had of anything I've presented in the past.
Well, thanks for doing the work, and thanks for sharing it with us. Eric Sleiman, a graduate student, a doctoral student, rather, at Oregon State University, working on training AI to get the biases out with a method called Fair to Dupe. Eric, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. We'll be back.